One big fear I often hear from people considering nomadic living is this. What if I'm lonely on the road? How can I stay connected? Staying connected comes in many different forms. One is through internet connectivity, so you can keep in touch with friends and family and also work from the road. Another is through making personal connections, which might be easier than you think. In this third and final episode of the Nomad Newbie series, we're diving deep into connections, how to make them, maintain them, and tips for getting connected from anywhere. Let's go.
Welcome to the Wayward Home Podcast, all about van life, boat life, and nomadic living. We'll bring you tips, interviews, and stories from the road and on the water. Now, here's your host, Kristen Haynes.
Hey there, I'm Kristen Haynes with thewaywardhome.com. I spend half my time in a Sprinter van and half on a sailboat in Mexico, and I hope to inspire you to pursue your nomadic living dreams. Well, it's time for the third and final episode of our Nomad Newbie series, where we've compiled some of the top tips from our guests in the hottest topics for aspiring nomads, like how to make money from the road. You can catch that in episode 56. How to downsize, that's episode 57. And this one, how to stay connected from wherever you are. If you've been wanting to ditch conventional life to hit the road or the waves, but you're feeling overwhelmed by all the information out there, well, the Nomad Newbie series is here to boil it all down for you. Our topic this week is how to stay connected on the road. But before we dive into this episode, I just wanted to tell you quickly about Visible. This is the unlimited data, call, and text phone service I use from both the United States and Mexico. A basic plan costs just $25 per month, but you can upgrade to the $45 per month plan to get additional service in Mexico and Canada, plus higher speeds for streaming. To check it out, head to thewaywardhome.com/visible. I'll also add a full link to my Visible review in the show notes. All right, so let's get into this episode of the Nomad Newbie Series. Today we're talking about how to get internet on the road, and I have the best people to talk about this here, Cherie and Chris with Mobile Internet Resource Center and Technomadia. Where can somebody start with their internet research for van life?
One of the most important things for anybody getting started is really understanding what their needs are and their tolerance for our complexity, because people who are geeks or who enjoy this sort of stuff can go completely to crazy town, overkill, having seven or eight connections going at once. And actually, I think we might have five going right now. But not everybody needs to go into super complex places depending on what their actual goals are. So understanding what you really need before diving in and throwing lots of money at it is very, right. Very important.
So the solution for someone who's working full-time and doing a lot of interactive video sessions like this is going to be very different. This requires a lot of bandwidth. It requires a redundant, reliable solution for us to not have dropouts and cutouts. But someone who maybe for their job just needs to check email, maybe answer some things, and maybe draft a document or do some photo editing on their computer and then upload it in batches, that's a very different solution. Mm-hmm. Someone who just needs to do Netflix in the evening or Hulu in the evening is a very different solution than someone who is maybe going out into the middle of nowhere and needing to do very high bandwidth things.
Yeah, so like people who are teaching video classes or who are doing telehealth and stuff, that's really critical. You can't have dropouts while you're in the middle of teaching a 400 person class where you're consulting somebody about their cancer treatment. So, you know, that's very, very different than a lot of other people who are like, well, yeah, I have to do a Zoom once a week and I'm just passive. I'm watching it. I'm not the presenter.
So it's very, very important to start with understanding what your needs are. And if you go on YouTube or blogs or other things, you read about someone else's solution, take into mind what they need and then take into account what you need.
Yes.
That's, yeah, such good advice. And I'm wondering for people who do a lot of video calls like this, how do you build that redundant system? Is that with that router that you showed a minute ago?
So right now we are broadcasting over Starlink, as well as Verizon, AT&T, T-Mobile, and we're also using Dish Network, which is the newest fourth carrier. Yes. We're bringing it all together on a Peplink router that has them all bonded together. So if any one of those has a dropout during this call, the others are right there to take over. So it should be seamless. Mm-hmm.
That's incredible. And you guys do have some of the best internet of any of these interviews I've done, and that is why. So that's fantastic. And so what if someone just wants to use their phone as a hotspot? What are some carriers out there that you recommend for that?
So the best plan right now for a smartphone only is Visible. This is owned by Verizon. It is a subsidiary of Verizon. It's a prepaid plan. They have a $30 per month option and a $45 per month option. Both of those plans include unlimited hotspot data. That means you can set up your own Wi-Fi network off of your smartphone and use, like, connect your laptop. You can connect your streaming devices to this, to your smartphone. It's unlimited hotspot data off of your phone. It is capped at 5 megabit per second speed. So you're not going to get 4K video out of this, but 5 megabit per second is plenty for most things on the web. Mm-hmm. And that is the best deal right now for those going for wanting
and
a smartphone.
And it does give you access to Verizon's network. So it gives you really great network everywhere, but it is the lowest priority user on Verizon's network. So people run into that in, again, congested areas. Visible customers will have a very dismal data experience, whereas like regular native Verizon customers will be streaming along or doing everything just fine. So you do have to like balance the trade-offs, but it is a very good deal.
But then all of the carriers have postpaid plans that you can get for your smartphone, and they're all offering options from 40 gigabytes to 100 gigabytes of mobile hotspot data off of the smartphone at full speed, as well as, you know, all the unlimited data you can use on your hotspot, on your phone itself. So definitely worth looking at those if you need the priority data.
And we keep the plans all the time are changing so much. So we do have a guide that is kept up. I think we update it almost every week on what the current most interesting plan options are for whether it's for a hotspot or a phone or anything else. If you people who need a lot of data, that's at
rvmobileinternet.com/plan picks. And if you go to the front page of our website, it's linked all
over. Right there
for that page.
Because that one changes a lot.
Oh, what a fantastic resource. And so what are the benefits of having like a dedicated hotspot instead of just hotspotting off your phone?
So a dedicated hotspot, for one, it's separate from your phone. So your phone can still be doing its phone things. Your phone tends to fall asleep. If you're using your phone as a hotspot, if you don't use it for a long enough time, it will fall asleep. A dedicated hotspot like this can just be set, turned on, it's going, and it is just making a Wi-Fi network that you can connect whatever devices you want to. And a lot of them actually now have Ethernet ports. So if you've got things that want to take advantage of a wire connection, they could do that.
Mm-hmm. Like it could plug right into a router, even a home router. It doesn't even have to be a special mobile router.
So it gives you a lot of flexibility there. They tend to perform pretty well compared to a phone because they're bigger. They have bigger physical antennas inside of them. Some of the hotspots, actually, this one does, has a little antenna port. So you can even hook up an outside external antenna or one that will suction cup into the window of your van. So that's actually very popular. Mm-hmm. The Netgear is a little MIMO antenna that can hook up to this.
I mean, the biggest thing, is smartphones aren't designed for full-time hotspot usage. Mm-hmm. They can run down the batteries pretty quickly. What happens if we're using this as our hotspot here and I decide to go for a walk? Well, he's just lost his internet. Yeah. So that's one consideration. But so if you need a lot of data usage, it's usually better to go with a dedicated hotspot device or a cellular embedded router.
Or multiple people are using it too. Right. So a phone can work really well for just one person because you're in control of it and stuff. And then upping the game to a cellular embedded router is kind of like a hotspot on steroids. It's got all the cellular antennas and stuff here. It's got Ethernet and it's got Wi-Fi as WAN, so it can connect to an upstream campground or a remote Wi-Fi network. And the nice thing about a cellular connected router is that you connect, have all your devices just connect to the router, and then you tell the router what upstream connections you want to do. So if you've got a lot of Wi-Fi things in your household, in your van or whatnot, some people we know have even their light bulbs are on Wi-Fi and stuff. You don't want to keep having to change how they're connected. You just tell them all, go to the router, tell the router how to connect. The router might be connecting to this. It might be using its own cellular connection. It might be using Ethernet to Starlink. And then this is just kind of like your central conductor hub.
Wow, that's all so interesting. I love it because some people write to me and they're like, I am required to be in Ethernet for my job or they won't let me work remotely. So that would help solve their problem.
It can. You need to really understand what the employer is meaning by a wired connection. Some of them are very specific. No, you cannot use cellular. You cannot use satellite. You cannot use Wi-Fi as your connection. You need to be a hardwired cable or DSL connection. Some, they just want the computer not connected to Wi-Fi. And that is fine because then you can just run an Ethernet cable out of your hotspot device or your router and you've solved that. And then they don't care what is actually providing the internet connection to the router.
And it could sometimes be just a don't ask, don't tell thing. It's like, oh yeah, I've got an Ethernet cable. It's upstream. It still might be Wi-Fi or cellular, but there's an Ethernet cable.
What are the benefits of actually plugging into that in the router instead of just using the Wi-Fi?
So Wi-Fi is a wireless technology, and it's short range, and there's a lot of Wi-Fi noise around it. It's an unregulated spectrum. So when you're in a campground, especially, you might have a lot of people that have a lot of Wi-Fi devices. They have a router, you have the campground's Wi-Fi network, and things like that.
If you ever click on the little Wi-Fi icon and pull scan for networks, and you see it goes like an entire page of different Wi-Fi networks there, that's like a crowded bar, and all those people are talking at the same time. And it's really hard to communicate when you've got 50 networks all sharing the same, basically the same room.
So what that means is your device, maybe your laptop and your router or hotspot device, are having a hard time negotiating a conversation. And that can result in slower speeds. It can result in dropouts. So having an Ethernet cable between your device and your router or your internet source gets around that. So it's the fastest connection that you're going to get. Yep. And you're going to be able to optimize whatever that backhaul is for your internet connection. Yep.
Cool. And before, you guys brought up something super interesting that people don't think about, is where you put your hotspot or your phone in your van to get the best signal. If you could tell me a little about that.
Vans are made of metal. Yes. And signal does not go hand in hand.
Yes. Unlike our other RVing friends, or we're in a boat that's made of fiberglass, vans are made of metal. They block signal, which means you want, if you don't have external antennas hooked up to your devices, have your smartphone, have your hotspot device near windows. You know, get them in the front dashboard, get them on the side mirror.
Don't melt them though.
Don't melt them. Don't put them in the sun. That's bad too. But what we do is we keep a soap dish, little suction cup soap dish that you can, you know, buy in the department store, like go to Target, go to Amazon. And we put that in the window, and we set our smartphone or our hotspot device in the window to keep it as unobstructed as possible.
And it, you can do your own little speed test of just, it can be amazing the difference of sitting on the van's table or something that's just below the metal line versus just 2 feet away, but sitting in the window, it can be a 10x difference in performance if you just run the speed test apps.
But the best reason for going with a router, these are the antenna ports on here. You can get antennas that you put on the roof and you just screw into here. That gets around the issue all the time. You don't have to worry about what direction you're parked in. You always have an antenna on the roof of the van, outside of all that metal box, and then you're getting the best signal inside your van.
Very cool. And speaking of antennas, what's your opinion about the WeBoost system?
Oh, cell boosters.
Yeah. Yes. So WeBoost is not an antenna. So you can use it, but it's not the type that you would plug into a router. A WeBoost or other cellular booster setup is basically taking a single antenna. You notice that this one has, one of them is Wi-Fi, one of them GPS.
Four of those are cellular antennas.
So this one single modem has four antennas that feed it. It's working off a technology called MIMO, that's multiple in, multiple out. Basically, it means it has four ears. And when you got to experiment, listen to some music right now or turn on this podcast, cover one ear. What happens? Your sound and your brain is only hearing one signal. You unplug your ear, you're hearing with two ears. Same thing happens with signals. And a cellular booster, what's happening is it's taking one voice. So basically, you're plugging your ear and you're putting a megaphone into the other ear, which is also it's rebroadcasting any other sound that's around, so any other noise. Sometimes, if you're very far away from the cellular tower, that amplification can actually be your best option. It's great also for upload capacity.
Megaphoning you back to the tower.
Right, because the transmitter in a small device like a smartphone isn't nearly as strong as what's on the cellular tower transmitting back. So putting a megaphone back is great. So it can really help with upload speeds. If you're doing a broadcast, have large upload files, a cellular booster can help with that.
Yeah, but the real core thing is, like, a cellular booster is just one funnel. It's one antenna, one amplifier, one everything like that. And they were useful back in the old 2G and early 3G days. But now all 4G devices and 5G devices use either two or four antennas. All 5G devices are four antennas. So you turn on a cell booster and you're forcing all the signal through that one single antenna. The 5G devices are basically being hobbled. They'll be running at a much slower speed. So the cell booster might help you make a voice phone call. It might help you get a little lick of signal in a remote area. But oftentimes for data, if data is your focus, a cell booster will actually slow you down when you turn it on. So number one tip for cell boosters, could be useful to have in your van, never leave it on all the time. It's a use it only when you need it kind of thing, because right. It's actually hurting you more most of the time, unless you really, really need it.
We used to say 80% of the time, having external antenna directly attached to your router or your hotspot device was going to give you the best cellular performance. Over a booster. Now I'd say 90% of the time as 5G has come on. There are some cases we'll get to a campground, we're really remote. The antennas alone are not doing enough. We turn on the cell booster and we can get enough signal out of that one single antenna coming through to get online and check what we need to do, or no one else around us can get online. So there are times when it makes sense.
We keep one in our toy box.
We keep one around, but we don't, they are, you know, they're a $500 investment. So you have to really consider, is it worth $500 that you might use it once or twice a year?
Yep.
Yeah, so true.
So we probably should start talk about Starlink. I bet a lot of people are curious about Starlink.
Yeah, there's the new Starlink in motion version now.
Right. So there's two Starlink dishes that are out right now. You've got the original one, which is the one that's just on the stand that you see a lot of people. Maybe they put it on a pole. That's the standard. They call it standard now. That one you can get with two different data plans. You can get it with the residential plan, which is meant for a fixed location, and then you can add portability to it. They now have a new dish, which is an in-motion dish. It's one that you fix to the top of your roof. You can use it while you're driving around.
It has no moving parts, but it's physically much bigger. So
it can see more satellites while you're in motion. Now, the standard dish, the original one, is $599. The new dish, the flat mount. The
flat high performance.
Yeah. The in-motion one is $2,500.
That's a big price jump.
So yeah. Starlink is, you know, they've got a beautiful photo of a van with the Starlink dish on it. We've put it on our van. We have tested it in our van in motion. It's great. But there's several problems with that high performance dish is, number one, the only plan you can get with it is the RV plan, which gives you no priority access. So you're always going to be deprioritized over. So in congested markets, you're going to get much slower speeds. We saw that with our residential dish versus the high-performance dish. We're going to get slower speeds.
And another catch of it is because you typically would permanently mount it on the top of a van. It doesn't really design to be moved around. It's again very subject to where you park and the trees around it and stuff. Because even though it can see a broader view of the sky, it's still, you know, it can't see through trees. It can't see through obstructions. Whereas the Starlink standard comes with a 75-foot cable and you can get even a longer 150-foot cable, and you can uncoil that and put the little, you know, the little tripod stand way out in the far side of your campground and where it can have a better view of the sky.
Or hoist it up a pole. We keep a pole in our van to hoist it up.
So that's much more flexible, but it's not really designed for in motion.
And then the other issue with both of them is power usage. the standard dish, the smaller one, that one's going to burn about 40 to 60 watts. Power.
Solar powers that you have in a van.
Refrigerator size use. the large in motion dish, that one's going to burn more like 80 to 110 watts of power. So it's a power hog. So if you're trying to boondock, you're going to need a pretty large battery capacity without having to run a generator to keep it going.
And or you just be really disciplined about to turn off the Starlink when you don't need it. And so
we made that mistake the other night. We're currently anchored. So basically, it's the equivalent of boondocking for RVers in our boat. The other night, we totally forgot. We had a glass or two of wine in the evening, and we totally forgot to turn down Starlink overnight. And we woke up in the morning to
the low battery alarm.
Low battery alarm. And we have a massive lithium battery. We have solar on this boat.
Yeah, it was a cloudy day. We hadn't charged up. And it was like, oh, darn. Yeah, we forgot to turn off Starlink and
drained our battery. Okay. No one was using it overnight. I mean, I'm pretty sure our cat was not streaming YouTube videos
It's definitely a consideration. It uses a lot more power than cellular. So it's, again, one of those reasons where it's a great thing. We love having Starlink. We use it all the time, but it is not the be-all, end-all. We still use our cellular and have all these other things and just combine them in good ways. And this is SpaceX we're talking about. So things change at a moment's notice, sometimes at a tweet's notice. So the anything to do with Starlink and SpaceX, check our latest guide. We've got keep it up to date at mobileinternetinfo.com/Starlink, and you can go over there. And so because this stuff is changing very frequently, and the plans might be different, the hardware might be different, the other things could be changing around by the time this airs. So keep close.
Yeah, I'm glad that you guys keep such a close eye on all this stuff for us. It's very helpful. And you have your website and your YouTube channel where you track all these changes. So that's fantastic.
It's an exciting time for connectivity. I mean, between 5G networks are starting to get really interesting and good. We're starting to see more generous data plans. It's unlimited, fully good unlimited. It's still a little hard to come by in some ways. But between that and satellite, and there's some new stuff on the horizon, it's a good time to stay
connected. It's a great time to stay connected.
Sounds like there's a lot of options at a lot of price points for people, which is really good.
Yes.
Yeah, some people are shocked and they're like, you spend that much on internet? Because I have, on a hotspot and the Starlink. And I'm like, well, yeah, I have to work. And luckily, our other expenses are lower. So it all rounds.
Absolutely. Yeah, it's the price of freedom. If you want to be able to still earn an income, it is one of the costs. And it is something that's always changing. The technology is advancing. The options that are available today, they'll all change in a month or two. And, that's why we're here. We're tracking them. We do have a free newsletter that you can sign up for. You get monthly updates on everything we've covered.
You guys are definitely the go-tos for anything mobile internet. And you have a great website and a YouTube channel. So hopefully people will go there and learn all they can because it's freedom, like you said. Like, there's nothing better.
I'm really excited to be talking to Amber Baldwin, a woman who's been a nomad for 5 years. First in a Class C RV, but mostly in her camper van. Amber is host of the YouTube channel Story Chasing, where you can follow along on her latest adventures. Since Amber runs a YouTube channel as her primary source of income, she often searches for boondocking spots based on phone signal.
And I do that through apps. So Campendium is the big one for me. Campendium has a filter on there where you can see if it has like AT&T or Verizon, which are both of the hotspots that I have. And if the cell signal is good, and this is based on people who've stayed there, it's their reviews. And so if they are saying that, the cell signal is pretty good there, then I start looking them, at other factors like where's the location? Is it far away from the city or not far away from the city? Is it going to be conducive for the van? Because some places that you go to, you might need four-wheel drive, which I don't have. So I look for that and then just make sure it's a beautiful, quiet spot. Because at the end of the day, I want to be able to go outside and put my camp chair and my table and go have breakfast outside, which is one of my favorite things to do, and read a book and have my dog out there with me and relax and not hear like a bunch of people.
Amber rarely stays in campgrounds, enjoying the peace and quiet of only nature around her. Amber said when she first started RVing, she was concerned she might be lonely on the road.
To be honest, my social life is off the hook these days. I have more community on the road than I ever had in a traditional sticks and bricks house. I think it's because, first of all, when you're traveling, you meet people all along the way, whether they're RVing or not, you meet people along the way. Some of my really good friends now are people who actually live in homes. My friends from New York, Mark and Grant, I met them my very first year of RVing, and we met because of our dogs. We were walking our dogs and I was in a park, they were in a park, and we ended up being really good friends, and I've stayed in their home. And then you meet full-time RVers and you just start building this community on the road with RVers. And I think with RVers, there's this instant camaraderie almost because you have something in common instantly with the RVing. And I think we're all probably looking for similar things, that freedom in life, exploration, quiet, peace, solitude. So we just instantly can make connections. So one of the places that I went to, and besides just traveling and meeting people on the road, there's all kinds of groups that you can get involved with. So one of the first ones that I got involved with was the Escapers group, which is an RVing kind of club community group. And they have convergences and different types of events spread out around the United States. And so that was the first thing that I did. And I've been able to make a lot of friends through that community. And so there's a lot of times the people that I connect with on the road. And then there's other types of community. So I'm in a van. You can connect a lot with people who are in similar situations in like the van life community, or even when I had my Winnebago, there was the Winnebago community. So there's all different types of groups to connect with. So you can be as social as you want to be or as alone as you want to be, whether you're introvert or extrovert. So for me, being an introvert, that's the other thing, is there's a healthy respect for that on the road, because there's a lot of us who are introverts. For me, being an introvert, I recharge by being by myself. So sometimes I'll be with a group of people, but then, you know, in a couple of weeks, I need to like go out by myself and hang out for a couple of days or sometimes even a month and just be by myself.
Amber thinks she's found more camaraderie on the road, partly because there's been a fundamental shift in how people interact in housing developments.
Back in the old days, I'm doing air quotes when I say that. Back in the old days, way before my time, they had built porches on the front of homes. And now, like, a lot of the homes are built with your garage in the front and you're really in your backyard when you want to be outside. And so I feel like we've lost this community when you think about the traditional sticks and bricks lifestyle in a lot of ways about being in our community and being outside and connecting with others, because I swear it's that porch on the front. When they took that away, everything started changing. But we have that almost full time in our RVs, where we because we live outside so much, we can build more community because we are outside and hanging out with other people. So I hope that makes sense.
Well, I hope you enjoyed this episode of the Nomad Newbie Series. Again, if you want to check out the phone plan I use for van life and on my sailboat, head to thewaywardhome.com/visible. This service is super affordable and includes unlimited data plus calls and texts. I've been really happy with it so far. Well, thanks so much for listening to this third episode of our Nomad Newbie Series on the Wayward Home Podcast. Remember to go back and listen to the first two episodes on how to work remotely on the road and how to downsize to start tiny living. I hope to see you there. I'll see you next time on the Wayward Home Podcast.